Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We're positively at Costas. We are in my homeland of Dundalk. It's not open. Shh. It's really, really quiet. Really quiet. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I will have a handful of these left, 10 times the cash. On Friday, we'll be at Fadley's Live from 2 until 5. Luke will be there. Other guests will be there. We'll be having fun. John Allen has decided to join me and drive in from his homeland and estate in Harrod County. You know, used to come across a bridge over here, and there ain't no bridge no more. John is from my rival neighborhood, although we were both Dundalk High guys. He's from Eastwood. I'm from Colgate. But we all spent time down here in the peninsula, whether it was the Roll Arena, Gales Memories down there, Pop's Tavern. And we're at Costas. We're on the road to the peninsula towards Sparrows Point. And the last time you came on over Drug City, I had Aaron Tamarchio from Trade Point Atlantic. And John, of course, is a rock star, just like it was always meant to be. My 25th anniversary reel is coming out. Mine says sports writer. I hope I fulfilled that. His was rock star. His band is playing at M3 in a couple weeks. Stone Horses, as well as Child's Play, as well as maybe sometime there'll be SR71 or Charm City Devils or any of those other bands. But do you want me to say Stone Horses? Is that what you want me to say?
My current
band.
Current project, yeah, yeah.
Current project.
Yeah, is Stone Horses, and that's where I fumble my way through guitar and sing and, well, try to sing. And
I didn't even know you played guitar. I told Gina Schock 2 years ago, like, he don't play the guitar. He plays the drums.
He don't play the guitar.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
We're going to have fun today. I got a whole list of crap for you, buddy.
Okay, cool.
I got stuff.
I've been fumbling my way through guitar for a long time. I actually started on guitar when I started playing music when I was like fourth grade or whatever, but it was too hard, and it was too hard to kind of look cool and play at the same time. So I was like, drums kind of came a lot more naturally.
That's why the drums happened? Really? I didn't know that about you.
It was a lot easier.
I've known you my whole life. I didn't know you started the guitar.
Yeah, and so for years I've gone back to it, and trying to learn to write songs. You know, you really need a melodic instrument. A lot of songwriting goes on inside my head, and it sounds great in there. And then
can computers help you with that a little bit, or no? You haven't tried. No, okay.
Yeah, I don't compose like on a keyboard or with a computer. I really kind of, it all starts with melody in my head, or if I'm playing guitar. A lot of times I won't play guitar for weeks, and I'll pick it up and I'll just start playing. And rock is about the sound, the tone of the amp and the guitar, and a song will come out like that quickly. Maybe it's not great,
acoustic, but, or no?
No, electric.
Electric guitar, yeah, okay.
Most of the time. I'll pick up an acoustic every once in a while. So, you know, that I'll improve for a while. I'll write the song and track it, and then I'll put the guitar down for a month or two, and then I'll lose everything.
But you can't play three notes on a piano, no?
I can play a little bit of piano, but I actually, during COVID, I took lessons, and then I started having pain in my wrist from doing it. I was playing too tensely, and I was like, I got to quit because I don't want to get carpal tunnel. I've played drums for, you know, most of my life and never had an issue, and here I am trying to
learn. Did you ever learn anything ergo drumming about, like, how to do it right and wrong?
Yeah.
From an arthritic standpoint, or from, like, I mean, you were younger when you were doing it. You might not think it about that way, but if you're going out and doing it five nights a week on a bus, you can't hurt yourself. Yeah. I mean, that's something that when I was the music critic, I was thinking way more about your emotions, your sobriety, transport, you know, just how hard it is, you catch a cold, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But getting hurt is a whole, like, seeing, like, you two never play without Larry Mullen, mm-hmm, and now having to go, like, bring a guy like you, bring somebody else in because he just can't physically do it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I had a lot of lessons early on, and there are a lot of theories about how you should play properly without having injury. One of the techniques that I started playing, as a rock drummer, is kind of disputed about how, you know, that could injure you. And I've always played
like pitchers with the shoulders at this point, right? With the Tommy John surgery,
right? So, you know, like,
if you're a kid and you're playing the drums wrong, you probably could really hurt yourself, right?
Perhaps
at 16, 17 years of age, you're playing too much.
I don't know about that age because you're still, you know, so young.
It feels like you could do it wrong and then really hurt yourself then.
Maybe, but as the years progress, certainly that can. I actually have a story about an injury that I did have, but it wasn't carpal tunnel. It was tennis elbow, tendonitis. We were on tour with SR71, And we got the call that we had to go shoot the video for the Tomorrow single that was about to come out. They fly us to Los Angeles. We get in this big warehouse where we're set up, you know, to play. And they brought in video.
They spent money.
Yeah, a lot of money.
Yeah, and you got to be ready to play.
We had an actor, an actress, like this whole storyline, and then they set us up, and they brought in video symbols, which video symbols are just two symbols glued together. So it's like hitting a big chunk of metal that's really super heavy, right? So I go to do my, you know, when you shoot a music video, you normally they'll
video
shoot.
Symbols are. What does that mean?
So
you're not making so much noise
right,
when you're playing,
right?
Okay,
because
got it. Okay.
Because the hardest thing about shooting a music video, a lot of people, I think some people still think we're actually really playing. No, we're miming to the song, the single that's already been recorded, right? But to make it look real, you know, I'm out there really bashing the shit out of my drums. Or didn't,
right.
I shouldn't say that, but bashing the hell out of my drums. So in order to do that, they pump like a full PA basically back at the band. So the music is unbelievably loud. So you can really lay into it and you can really make it feel
like you're in your basement.
Like you're out in an arena, like you're out on a live gig. You're really kind of playing. So what happens is you shoot like a long shot of the band, full band, you shoot a medium shot of the band, then you go for close-ups, right? And it's always the singer gets the first one, the guitar player, the bass player. Drummer's always last, right? So by that point, you're completely exhausted. Anyway, we're shooting the video for Tomorrow, and I'm hitting these cymbals, and they're not moving because they're so freaking heavy.
So you're hitting a brick, basically.
I'm hitting a brick, and it's like hitting a wall. And I've got these huge, I'm playing 2B drumsticks at this point. They're big and fat and heavy, and I'm clanking up on these cymbals, and they're not moving. I'm like, oh my God, like I'm gonna be in this video, so I got to make it look real. So I got to really crank up and hit these cymbals so they move, you know, a little bit. So I'm bashing the hell out of these things. I go back to the hotel, and my elbow starts aching. I have one day travel day the next day to fly, I think, to Chicago to resume the tour. And I'm like, oh my God,
ice!
I'm dying here. My
like a pitcher.
It's burning.
Yeah,
my elbow's burning. So yeah, it was the rice thing. Raise, you know, whatever
ice
compression.
Yeah,
elevation.
Yeah.
So like the whole rest of the tour, all the way up to Christmas, this is like
you're battling this.
Yeah, like just to make it through the tour.
Fun.
So then we get the video back. I'm not in the video. It's all the actor and actress and Mitch, you know, lead singer for SR. So I'm like, wow, that was really stupid. I just really injured myself, you know, for nothing. But, you know.
John Allen is here. We're at Costas. You know, I have a whole list of things. This is my shot sheet for the whole week. So you can't read any of this. Don't look at this. So these are my ideas. I'm going to pull my hair down and get in your way.
I can't
like,
read that chicken
like you
track.
Did. That's fine. So really, I called you because I want Dee Snider on the show because I interviewed Dee 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I guess the whole part of this 25th anniversary documentary is coming out. I've been working on it with Greg Landry, who really wants it to be good. You have a role in this, and I will allow – we'll talk about that. But I really reached to you literally just friend to friend and said, hey, I'm trying to get Dee Snider on this month. And I'm like, oh, yeah, dude, you're dragging my ass out of bed at 11 in the morning to come down to Meriwether because you're playing at like 1 o'clock or something.
1 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah, you play at 1 o'clock. So, and
on a Saturday. Yeah, the first day.
So I'm like, dude, I need to get you on too. Hey, I'm doing Costas tomorrow. And you're from Dundalk, ain't you? And I thought, well, we're doing this thing about the bridge. So I've got Todd Crandall coming by, a fellow Dundalkian and a local politician extraordinaire from the neighborhood who I've known my whole life. He's coming by a little later on. And I've got Joe Gold from Key Brewing. If anybody's familiar with Key Brewing, right around the corner from here, right behind the Royal Farms down the road there, get some fried chicken as you go in. But everybody is doing bridge relief. Tiki Lee's did something. And I had this planned in January. I looked at the Orioles schedule. I'm like, oh, Orioles play the Red Sox on the 8th. Well, you know, we'll go down there and, you know, have a beer at 2 o'clock, whatever. This is before Angelos was selling the team, before Angelos died, before the team was purchased by another owner, and then before the bridge fell. So all of this happened, like, around this date here. And then I hit you yesterday. And I'm like, oh, I need an early guest. You're like, I'll drive to Dundalk. And I'm like, all right. So the bridge. Let's start with the bridge. We grew up I don't know, a couple hundred yards from each other, really, as far as neighborhoods go. I could see the bridge pretty much in the second floor of my first two homes that I lived in. And anywhere you drive that's, it's Hollandtown, but anywhere you drive that has a high land here, literally, Fate Avenue, the area over where Gina Schock is Eastwood. From, Eastwood, anywhere that's high, you could see the top of the bridge. So I never thought about it as Baltimore's bridge or whatever. It's kind of like, if you would have asked me before it fell, it's sort of Dundalk's bridge. I mean, it's Turner's Station's bridge, Sparrows Point's bridge, Dundalk's bridge. Yeah. And, dude, I started sobbing in a hotel room in Orlando at 8:30 in the morning. It was 2 hours into it, and I'm sitting there watching the coverage, and I lost my ish. I don't know what it was like here, and I don't know what it's like. All the Dundalk people seem to have this association to that bridge that we didn't realize we even had.
Well, that's exactly right. Like, you know, it's a piece of steel, and you know, multiple pieces of steel. And, you don't think about it. Like I look back at it now, I think how beautiful it was in its design and simplicity. And
you're an artist as well, I may add. Yeah. So you have an art thought about you.
Yeah, and like today, coming over, like you said, I'm out.
You would have taken the bridge.
I would.
100%.
I would have taken the bridge. I think I did last time we came down here. But coming through the Fort McHenry Tunnel, I looked over and I could see where the roadway comes up.
First time you saw it?
It stops. It's the first time.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. I haven't looked. I have refused to look. I've been by twice during the night. One time I drove, I was on the phone coming out of the city. I went through the tunnel last week, but I was like in a conversation on the phone and I never looked up.
Yeah.
I still haven't looked up. I still haven't looked at it, dude. Yeah. I'm going to get ishy talking. I'll be a mess. It's going to be really hard for me to look in that direction.
Yeah.
Especially from Kane Street specifically, because I live there. And when you went where the Home Depot and the diner is, you could always see the truss. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where I think about seeing the bridge. There and like coming out of East Point above the mall where like Norris Ford, like above Norris Ford, you could always see the truss down sort of beyond Merritt Boulevard. You know, like you just see it rise. Yeah. It's gone, huh? It's gone, huh? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you can see the wreckage or whatever. I mean, I've driven over that bridge thousands of times between playing gigs over. There used to be a club there, originally called Sandbar, I guess, in the 80s, and then it was called The Network when we started playing there. Became LA Gators, Daytonas, whatever, no longer there. So I drove over that all the time. And then also I worked at Marley Station Mall in a record store.
What?
In high school, yeah. And so I
drove. You worked in Glen Burnie?
Yeah, man. Down, well, was it Glen Burnie? Yeah.
Why did you work in Glen Burnie when you're from Dundalk? What was that about? Why didn't you get a proper job at East Point Mall?
Because,
like I did.
Right.
I worked at Soundwaves.
Right. So I
only job I ever had.
But see,
literally.
But in my egotistical, narcissistic mind back then, I was already playing out in clubs and stuff. And so when I walked in the record bar, the people there, they were super cool and nice. I don't know. They didn't really treat me like I was like a rock star or anything. But I felt weird about like working there. You know,
in Dundalk, not in Glen Burnie.
Like I'd see people, you know, I'd see people that I know, and I was like, I was supposed to be, you know, it's like all fun, right? It's supposed to be image or whatever. So I thought I'd go.
Well, it was the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd go down to Marley Station and I'd be incognito. And I really was. I mean, I only lasted like three months down there or something.
I lasted maybe 4 months at Soundwaves. Yeah. And I can tell you the months. I worked there when my son was born. So I worked there from maybe July of 84. Until Christmas. I think I made it to Christmas. And all the albums was like Julio Iglesias. Mm-hmm. All of you, body and soul. You know, that. So it was Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA. Starships, Nuclear Furniture. These are the biggest albums during that period of time. So those are the 4 months. You can look at
that. That's how I remember my time at the record store as well. You remember the
albums that were on the
releases,
wall.
Right.
Right.
Mine, I was there later. It was like Kingdom Come. First record came out. It was like, you know, very Zeppelin-y.
Very Zeppelin-y.
The Church, the big record.
Under the Milky Way.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, right.
Record.
Right.
Yeah, stuff like that. I remember that coming out. And we had, like, it seemed like thousands of copies, and we had to build these big displays.
And you went over to Bridge every day for that job.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, because a tunnel, you can't use a tunnel. No. Tunnels. No. Yeah, well, we're back to that, man. John Allen is here. We're Costas. We're going to have some crab soup. So I wrote down all this cool stuff about the bridge. And I want you to talk about this because you talked about, you said you were on a podcast a couple weeks ago promoting M3. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the host, and I found a tape of me being interviewed by two Dundalk girls at the Dundalk High
radio station?
Television. It was DHS television. It must have been some Ples cable offshoot for the Dundalk Community College channel. This is 1990. Four
was it
five,
the Lion's Roar?
95. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, I did that show.
So I found the tape in doing the documentary, mm-hmm. and they're asking me about my dreams. Like, I found this yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Like, you did your script reading a month ago. Mickey blew it off a month ago. Brillhart saved it. Gina did her thing. And, you know, so I have all the Keith Brewer, who's coming on the show tomorrow as well. So it's sort of rock and roll week here. He and Rob are doing this cavern thing later on in the month.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to go do that at the Big Falls or someplace. So I'm going to go see them, but I don't know what it is. That's why I'm having Keith on the show. So I found this tape of me very young speaking to this younger girl, high school girl at the time, and I'm probably 25, 26, and about my dreams and my goals. And 30 years later, I found this. And I thought, John probably did that show mm-hmm. and probably said a bunch of crazy stuff that you would squirm about. And you read from my documentary, and I am indebted. You'll make me cry if I look at you. But you read about my life and sort of the harder parts of my life. I specifically gave you some of those parts because we've known each other longer. And then I thought to myself, like, you did this for Brian in a tribute way that maybe, like, all these rock docs have inspired me a little bit to tell my story because it's been 40 years and 25 years of doing it. I think I'm entitled at this point to put something out that's 30 minutes long. In your case with Brian, you put the band back together. And this is where I guess we bring M3 in. You talk about the festival, mm-hmm. D-Snyder, all that stuff. That you put together a video prior to M3 for a huge reunion night two summers ago down at Soundstage.
Yeah.
And I was one of the guys that watched it. People were drinking. I was actually with Mickey, and I was with Kirk that night. And people were talking a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and I'm like, stop. And I'm, you know, I'm seeing good old boys, and I'm seeing the logo, and I'm seeing the pictures. And I'm like, John put that together because it's a slideshow, and it's all the stuff in your basement to tell the story of Child's Play. And you said something flippant to me yesterday when I put you on. You're like, well, you know, there's behind the music and it's before the rock stars and we never made it, kind of like a thing.
Right.
I want you to talk about that a little bit because putting together a documentary of anything, and I'm in the process of doing that right now, involves this thing. You've had, like, I don't want to get you too emotional, but you've had an incredible tragedy within the family of Child's Play and trying to pay respect to that, trying to show these pictures, trying to get some emotive feeling, but you don't want people sobbing when you're out there, you know, opening the show, but you want to be respectful. So I just want to give you the platform for that. Because I'm sure you can find old videos of you and Brian talking about your dreams from 30 yeah. years ago that would probably either be fun or awful. I don't know where it is, but it depends on when you see it.
Probably, I have no idea. The show you're talking about, I think it was on Dundalk Community College's television station, which I actually took classes there for. I never got my degree because I was going to be a rock star. I wasn't going to need it.
But you turned out all right.
But yeah.
Kids, don't try this at home.
Right. I believe it was called The Lion's Roar. And it was actually Brian and myself that did the interview. And I don't remember. I think we had a lot.
You have it, though. You have it on videotape?
I don't think I do any longer. I thought I did, but...
Did you digitize all your stuff or no?
I have not.
I got a guy for you.
Okay.
Greg Landry's going to take care of this 1,000 transfers.
Actually, I'm sorry. I did last summer digitize all the stuff to put together that slideshow
for Brian
and that intro. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, that was a labor of love. Really, I tried to show the band as
how long was it? 8 minutes, maybe 6-8 minutes.
Yeah, something around there. Maybe I think it was 10 minutes, and because I think we played it 3 times over during the changeovers typically between bands are about a half hour. So I think I made it.
Well, the first band I ever saw do that was the Eagles. Oh. At the turn of the century, I saw the Eagles.
Great book about them.
Yeah, I saw the Eagles. It was their millennial concert. It was in Vegas. Tickets were expensive, and you know, before I knew my wife, and they did a halftime video, right? They did like
an intermission
8-minute piece that became the documentary that we all know as the 4-hour documentary of, you know, all their fights, all their good, bad, and ugly. That's such a great documentary.
Yeah.
But I think they were inspired a little bit by trying to put together what you put together,
yeah,
which is that it's at a concert. We don't want to bore you or make you cry, but we want to rock you a little bit. We want you to see funny pictures of us and emote and all that. And so this is the first time I'd ever seen a band do it at a concert.
Yeah.
It's the Eagles, though. It's not rock and roll. You know what I mean?
Well, it's kind of funny that the way you said that, my journey with that was kind of reversed, because I kind of, for years, I've been thinking about doing a behind the music type of thing. Like I said, what you're referring to, the flippant remark, it would be, you know, not you know, where are they now, or you know, has been kind of thing. It's just the never was, because we never achieved, you know, huge national success as Child's Play, right? So I was gonna, you know, try to maybe get a narrator. Maybe I got to talk to Keith Brewer.
You got to talk to Keith. Yeah, but Keith's got nice pipes.
But I have a lot of, you know, video footage of us, you know, playing in clubs, playing covers, even, you know, I think I included some of that in the intro that you talked about. But yeah, that was really a tribute to Brian, and it wound up kind of at the end. We all, you know, I sort of had an in memoriam page with all the crew guys that we've lost, in addition to Brian, and his dad, who was our first manager. Really, he passed away during COVID. So I wanted to do that for his family.
It's tough, but it's compelling, right? Like, really,
yeah,
right?
I mean,
you're the only one that can do it as well, right? Like, to do it justice.
I don't know. I mean, I love doing that kind of stuff, and I'm a bit of a control freak, so
yeah.
You know, I
really, Greg Landry's finding that out today.
Yeah. So
you're not taking that picture of Dan Roderick's out. Now, I mean that. Right. So that's
yeah.
So that's the last text in my phone.
Oh, yeah. So we're kind of birds of a feather, right?
I'm an independent Sohnstein.
So I mean, like, the first tribute we did for Brian, it really hit home that after doing it, and his mom and dad were there, and of course,
this is soundstage you're talking about.
This is soundstage. Right, okay. This is a year after he passed in 2012. He passed in 2012, sometimes I just got to be hit over the head with a brick. I think I realized that the tribute, it was really for them. I mean, like, I saw his mom and dad sitting there, and you know, it hit me. I was like, you know, I thought we were doing this to honor him and to make everybody feel good who were our fans, and of course that's part of it. But it really hit home when I looked at his mom and dad. And
well, the effort was, I mean, that's what we're doing here, because you're not going to do that on stage,
right?
But there's a part where it's, look, I mean, you make a couple bucks, you sign some autographs. I was there last year, family, your daughters, everybody gets to come and see you do that in that environment. But it was because of Brian that you still have the ability to do that.
Right.
Like, literally.
Right. And then the other part of it, like you were talking about the emotionality, I mean, after we did the Child's Play set, his sister got up and sang one of his songs, and man, I mean, that just slayed me.
Right.
Because they had a video presentation that went along with that as well, and just watching that, like, you know, and not being on the other end, not being up on stage, but being in the audience. I mean, I don't know how there wasn't a, you know, there. I don't know how there was a dry eye in the house.
Sammy Hagar did a tribute the other night to, Give Me the Country Star, it just died.
Toby Keith.
Yeah. And they were really close. He said, I just was happy I didn't lose it during doing it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's hard. It's hard.
It is, man. You know, especially when you pour so much into things, and you know, if you're really tired and like, you know, it can get to you. I'll never forget, there was when Charm City Devils, my band, got on to the, you know, Motley Crue tour on Crue Fest. The day before we started the tour, which was outside of Philadelphia in Camden, New Jersey, I had an interview with this girl who, like you, I've known her. She used to come to all ages shows down in Springfield, Virginia. And she was writing the article, I think it was for Baltimore Magazine. And she came up and she's interviewing me. And I started getting emotional about it because I knew that she had known my journey, how long I've been at this, you know, as a drummer or whatever, playing Child's Play, SO71, you know, all these years. Finally coming to fruition where I'm fronting this band, you know, Charm City Devils, and we're going to do this entire tour, you know, of amphitheaters and arenas, opening up this huge, huge
tour.
Yeah,
well, there's also, you and I, if you want to go back to into the catalog of John and Nestor, the whole psychology of you're a drummer, you're not a singer, right? Right, or you know, and there's also that, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess to a degree. When I watch bands, I usually kind of always gravitate. I always wind up going back and watching the drummer instead of lead singer.
I will always think of you as a drummer, bro, because that's just where it's at, right? Like,
you're
people
from Baltimore.
That, yeah, I mean,
and that's what you saw me do for years. And
well,
years.
The people that met me when I was 15 still treat me like I'm 15. I'm 55. You know, that's just part of human nature, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
You can cut your hair, you can get in front of the band. You know, I mean, there's a point where people still see Dave Grohl and see the drummer from Nirvana too, right?
Yeah, maybe.
There are some people, you know.
I'm sure. Yeah.
But for you to arrive in that way, and you see someone that's been there for the whole journey, I mean, that's why I reached to you for the documentary, because I was with Greg. The documentary really happened because of my son. My son convinced me when I started talking to him. He's like, you should spike the ball. It's been 25 years. You should spike the ball. And he loves documentaries in general. And Greg hit me last year and said, hey, you know, I want to tell some stories and do some documentary stuff. And I'm like, well, I kind of want to tell my story, but I don't have time to do it. Because, like, to your point, like, I'm not giving you a bunch of pictures and saying make it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to be involved in telling the story. Only you can tell the Brian Jack story.
And you have to shape it, too.
Yeah, I guess you do. I mean, so getting this script together, I said to Greg, I'm like, he's like, who's going to narrate it? And I'm like, well, you. He's like, oh, no. He said, you know, I can do it good. He's like, you have people that can really do it great. He's like, he gave me homework. He's this is typical of like when you deal with professional people. It's like when you had producers for your band, you didn't want to hear it. But then you went home that night and you're like, all right, I'll play that part maybe. Maybe he's got a good idea of playing that part.
No,
you're always
that
right.
That came 20 years
ago. Well, I'm 55 now. That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Well, I am 55 now, and if Greg's going to do this. So Greg said to me, no, you know, and I'm not the narrator of my own documentary, obviously, right? So, so I said, all right, who would I get? Who would be the people? And I thought, well, the people in my story. So I thought of Ray Bachman, and I thought, this is getting trending longer as we wrote a script on it and had pictures and stories and videos and twists and turns. And Greg said, you should get a series of people that, like, you know, that you're going to feel good about. And I'm like, well, I called John, but he ain't going to want to do this. It'll take him 6 hours, you know, to give him eight paragraphs to
do. Well, you didn't know that at the time. I told you.
I felt like such a turd. All of you. I watched Gina struggle. So I started
thinking
about. It's
not easy, people, to do voice work. The voiceover people are really.
Was this
great.
Your first documentary voiceover ever? Did I ask you to do something you've never done before?
First documentary, yeah.
You read a books on tape or anything like
no,
that?
No, but I've tried to do some voiceover stuff, and I'm like, man, I'm like, this is tough, you know, to overcome my Baltimore accent and to. not,
I love your Baltimore accent.
And to not be monotone, you know, like it's not easy, and I sound like I'm 12 to my.
That's
to
not
my
a bug.
Ear.
That's a feature. Baltimore accent.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I told Gina. So I started to think about like as it got written, because it's going to come out in a couple weeks, and I have a whole thing. It's going to come out right around the NFL draft, so we're trying to get it finished. But there were all these segments, and I remembered hearing Keith Brewer.
Yeah, he's great.
So
he's a pro.
I thought he did Behind the Music on MTV.
I did too.
He did Before They Were Rock Stars on VH1.
All right.
So, and I remember watching the show. I was living in White Marsh. I had my bedroom upstairs and my big screen TV. And I'm watching some great thing on like Sheryl Crow. I had a crush on her. And before she grew up in Missouri and strummed the guitar. And she's a music teacher.
I got to meet her.
I met her once too.
I hung out.
She's as beautiful.
I hung out with her at Tom Morello's house.
I can't top that. I met her at the All-Star game in New York. So, but
sweetheart.
I saw it at the end and it said narrator Keith Brewer. And I'm like, my Keith, that Keith.
Nobody spells her name like that, of course.
So I reached to him right away, and because I thought if I had him do the beginning and the end, I could figure the middle out.
Oh, yeah.
I could, you know what I mean?
You got a pro on bookending. Yeah,
before he was nasty, nasty. So
I should have smoked cigarettes. Maybe I would have had that gravelly Keith deep, that announced.
Marlboro Man, yes. I had the funniest thing. I'm going to take a break because I want to get some crab soup. I want to hang. John Allen's here. We're hanging until we're not hanging. I got Maryland Lottery tickets. We're at Costas. We're going to be at Fadley's on Friday. This Friday, 26th, Crab Cake Tour's on hiatus the 18th because I'm going to see Springsteen in Syracuse. But so I'm in, and this will, you'll laugh at me and we'll break and we'll come back because it's going to play right into my theme of what we're going to talk about in the next segment that you don't know about that I'm going to drop on. It's that song. So that's your clue before we go to Final Jeopardy.
Okay.
I went to Florida 2 weeks ago. It was a weekend in Angelo's died. I was in Florida driving. My back still hurts. All I did was drive. Like, we got there, we drove to Sarasota. Then we drove to Fort Myers. It was baseball games. I was Luke's chauffeur because I don't have a press pass kind of famously. Mm-hmm. He does, right? So I drop him off at the front door. It's like roller skating. I'll pick you up at 10, Luke. Okay, if it rains now, hon, call me because I'll come and get you. You know, and it did rain. I had to come get him. Soaking wet on a yoga mat. So I'm down in Florida doing all this. Saturday, Luke disappears with his best friend in the world. He's got a family in Orlando, kids, St. Bernard's, the whole deal. So I have 2 days free, and it's Tampa. So I went late at the pool, and that night, Air Supply and Little River Band were playing this beautiful outdoor facility in Clearwater by the Ruth Eckerd Hall on the water. Sunset. Tickets were $30 on the lawn, beautiful place. I like Air Supply. I love Little River Band. I'm like, I'm in. I'm going to go. So I go to a bar district. It's a little like, Clearwater's like every place else. It's not completely, it's a little patched together. You know, stuff's missing downtown and like whatever. So I park the car and I go to a bar. I'm at the corner of the bar and my hair's out. I'm standing there. I'm waiting to get a beer in this Mexican joint. And a girl comes up and she wasn't like flirting. She had a dude with her. It was just been cool. And I said, yeah, I'll have two of those Pacificas and a draft and a glass. And blah, blah, blah. Thank you. And I pull my credit card out. And the girl says to me, you've got a great voice. Are you in radio? And I'm like, no, I'm just, you know, you're in a band. You sing in a band. You're an announcer. You do something. And I'm like, hey, you know, I'm in Florida. It's like you at Marley Station Mall. Just kind of like, you know, I'm just doing my thing. So I buy my beer, drink my beer. I go, she's at the other end of the bar. I went to pee and I flirted with her on the way by. I'm like, hey, how you doing? She's like, I just want to tell you, if you had a radio show, I'd listen to it. I never let on. I just thought it was the funniest thing ever. And I said, I'm going to tell somebody that story on the radio.
That is so there.
Yeah. So Mr. Radio Voice.
There you go.
I ordered one beer and she knew I was a radio. She was convinced I was a radio.
That is crazy.
But the ultimate compliment is when she told me she would listen to my show.
Yeah.
And say, oh, you're the one. John Allen is here. We're at Costas. M3, plug that. Tell everybody M3, what's going on. Plug away.
So May, what is it, 4th?
It's Derby Day.
Yeah.
So, yes.
May 4th. And, Saturday. So we...
I want to rock!
We're one of the first bands
on. Yeah, is that good?
On. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
That was good. I think that was... I think that was even, like, perfect pitch.
I tried.
Yeah.
Cool. Ain't you a singer in a band?
Did you know that?
Ain't you a singer in a band?
But when we play on a Saturday, the headliner is Queensryche, you know, Stephen Piercy of Rat. He'll be doing all the Rat.
I can't sing Jet City Woman. I can't hit that one. Not this morning, anyway.
Last in Line, which they're all the guys from the Dio band. And they'll be doing all Dio stuff.
A little Sabbath, too, or no?
I would think so.
Okay.
Because
they got to do Iron Man or something, right?
Well, probably not that era. Cause
they'll probably do some Dio era.
Dio era.
Yeah, okay.
I would think Mob Rules. Mob Rules. Stuff like that. Vinny Appice's playing with them, so I'm Jack.
I interviewed him once. He had purple hair. Yeah. He was in that purple band. Remember they all had purple hair?
No.
Google that. I promise you, Vinny Appice did my show.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. It was not my show. No. We did the mix, the Almost Famous era. Back. Yeah.
All right.
So I've interviewed, out of this group, Jeff Tate. I interviewed the guitar player from Rat that passed away.
Robin.
I interviewed him. I never interviewed Dio. I interviewed Kevin Dubrow from Quiet Riot. Yeah. Lynch Mob, I interviewed George Lynch.
All right.
I almost got a job once because of George Lynch.
Really?
I've
never seen him play. I'm anxious. I'm jacked to see him play because a friend of mine is playing bass for him right now.
I interviewed Aldo Nova when he was involved with Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Child's Play. I've been knowing them guys for a long time.
So
I saw them at the Seagull.
How did you get a job?
I didn't get a job. But, like, this would be a way longer documentary if I just went through, like, my career path and my ambition. You knew me as a very ambitious lad. Mm-hmm. You've known me my whole life. So, I'm interviewing you.
Writing for one of the big local newspapers at high school.
Right. Well, I'm interviewing you in 87, 88, 89. When, you know, like, no, it's Child's Play era. So, like, Child's Play era, I'm interviewing people, bands. It's what I did.
4 years old, people.
It's what I did for years. I did, you know, people know I did this. So, by the way, I found all the tapes of David Bowie. Like,
I'm reading the book by him that his wife wrote right now.
Amon?
No, Angie.
The older, all right. So I have all of these tapes that were from the Radio Shack when I lived on King Street, where the phone picks up, and it's, hello, would you accept a collect call from Mr. David Bowie from the UK? Yes, please. And Baltimore Sun's paying for it, right? Mm-hmm. Or the phone would ring, and I know, like, it's 2:00, and Billy Joel's going to call me.
Right.
I pick up the phone, and I hit the record. Hello, is Nestor there? Nestor there? Mm-hmm. Yes, this is Nestor. Hey, this is Billy Joel. So I have all of these, like, cool things, right? So these are going to be in the documentary. The George Lynch story is Lynch Mob was playing opening for two other bands. And I want to, I'll make it up, Rat and Poison. I'm making that up.
Well,
it might not be right. Was it?
Is it Lynch Mob or was it when he was with Dokken? Because
it was Lynch Mob 90-91 in that range,
right.
Okay? So they were playing whatever the Shed was in Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah.
I had resumes trying to get a job, any job, sports job, a job, anywhere, because I was ambitious, right? I didn't really want to live in Green Bay, but I thought that I was going to apply to the paper there. I didn't really want to live in Memphis, but I thought being the music critic of the Memphis Commercial Appeal would be appealing. Because I interviewed the big rock stars, because the Baltimore Sun and Times Mirror, which was the LA Times, had access to it, when I would interview any rock and roller, it would go on the wire.
Nice.
And it would get picked up. So if you were the publicist for Child's Play and I interviewed you, your story would go on the web and maybe you showed up in Toledo opening for a band and they're like, oh, we got this story. There's a Toledo connection because Idzy's uncle's from whatever, right? Did they pick a story up? So my stories went everywhere and editors then started calling me. The day that Stevie Ray Vaughan died, the woman that ran the Tacoma Morning News wanted me to write a tribute.
Wow.
Like, and pay me $100 on the spot. Can you turn this over in an hour or two? Yeah, I can do something for you, right? Mm. So I was respected enough that I was trying to get a gig. The Memphis Commercial Appeal's rock critic. This is true. You can look this up. I had been trying to get a job there. And the guy who liked me, this is a crazy, and now I'm thinking of the whole story, it's crazy. The guy who liked me. He's like, I got a critic here, things might be changing. The critic went to the show and reviewed Lynch Mob, mm-hmm. and I think George Lynch got sick or something and didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
So the review had a review for a band that didn't play. So clearly, the reviewer wasn't there.
Yeah, didn't attend, right?
So they were going to make a change in that department. And I thought I was going to get this gig because Lynch, it had a Lynch Mob.
Canceled the show.
Yeah, like, yeah. And it turned out, and I'm not making this up, and I will drop the mic on this because it's a terrible ending. The guy who was the editor had a heart attack and died a couple weeks later. And when I called back, I think his name is George Henderson. I'm thinking Henderson's name. Last name is Henderson. George Henderson's the Thundog guy, baseball. But I called back, and they're like, he passed away. And it's like, the guy who wanted to hire me died. I can't laugh about that, but this is 35 years
right.
ago.
Right.
But the things in life that take you on a different path.
Divine providence.
If Doc McGee would have been there for you that night.
Right.
Yeah. John Allen is here making me tell stupid stories. I want to tell rock star stories when we come back in. And I want to like talk about songwriting and talk about Dundalk and talk about the Key Bridge and Working Man and Costas and like how rock and roll songs are about my bottle, my wine, my girl, my job, my town.
Mm-hmm.
My hometown.
Yeah.
Good old boys making good old rock and roll.
Okay.
Can we do that?
Yeah.
John Allen is here. He will be talking about M3. Get any other bands or do we get them all?
Oh, no,
we didn't get them all.
We
Sunday.
We missed the whole second day.
Yeah, let's go second day.
Sunday is Brett Michaels with DC.
He's a Steelers fan. I had him on the show once, Brett Michaels.
We won't.
He stole a girl from me on the rap.
We won't hold either one of those things against him, right? No, we won't hold that against him. He's a nice guy.
D.
Snyder.
I want to rock! Yeah, all right, yeah.
That guy. I mean, I'm such a fan of his. First of all, he's got an amazing voice. Secondly, one of the best front men I've ever seen. Like, I mean, just knows how to handle a crowd. Just has them, you know, in the palm of his hand.
I saw them in the pit, open for Maiden, and I had my press pass.
At Cap Center?
Cap Center. I have the pictures from that whole show.
That's the show I'm talking about.
I had Bruce Dickinson, and I was backstage with Eddie when they brought Eddie through the hole. And
Well, that show blew,
not Eddie Murray,
blew me away because, like, they only gave them like a 20-minute, 25-minute slot.
Yeah.
And D, at the end of it, he was doing his rap, his stage patter, and I was like, oh, my God, like he's really going on. But it was great. And he had the crowd, 20,000 kids doing this.
This was the hot pink
in
with the fencing.
Yeah.
I had pictures of that show.
In unison.
Good pictures.
He had them turn the house lights on in the Cap Center. I mean, he fronted like nobody's business. Like he just, I think it was all those years in clubs in New York, Staten Island, or you know, Long Island.
Wicked Lester.
Just no, that was Kiss.
Oh.
But that all
wasn't he in a band with? Was he not Wicked Lester? Or am I nuts?
You're nuts. That was Gene Simmons. That was
what?
That was
Dee Snider had a connection to Kiss that
really?
Was a. Band connection.
I did
okay.
Know that.
All right. Do you know more than
maybe.
Me? You're the real story. That's why I'm asking.
But yeah, I mean, but D is and just I saw him speak at a CMJ on a panel, the College Music Journal conference years ago, and just a super intelligent dude as well. I mean, he's just I'm a fan.
One of the few guys that's done me and Howard Stern.
Oh yeah.
Night Ranger.
I
love Jack Blades.
Yes, Night Ranger Kelly. Had dinner with him. He's a great dude.
Striper.
Striper.
I always see that picture.
To hell with the devil.
Well, they always look like the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right
yeah, they had like bumblebees. Yeah.
Again,
Y&T.
We won't hold that against
Summertime Girls. Oh, what a great song that is. That's
a
great song, dude.
I tell you, even before that, Mean Street and prior to that, Black Tiger. That was my first one.
Always, Y&T, always love Faster Pussycat. Always.
Yeah.
Poison
great.
Ivy, I love that. I love that.
Yeah. Don't change that song. Cold Sweat is actually the band that we toured with touring Rat Race. That was the we went out with them. That was Mark Ferrari's band. Mark Ferrari used to be the guitar player for Keel, and so we did a short stint with them in like September, leading into Halloween when we were working that record. It was. It was incredible, man. I never forget the first night of the show. Like we, first night of the tour, we show up in North Carolina at this club called Cadillacs, and we walk in the back door. They were sound checking, and the stage volume blew our faces off because they had just come off tour with Ronnie James Dio. So when you're in an arena, you're used to having that Marshall crank way up, man. And this was like a club, you know. We walked in, we were like, oh, my God.
Turn that down, dude.
It's so loud. It was great. No, because it felt like it gave us license finally to be really loud on stage, you know, because we had this great sound man who, and it's a good rule to live by, is.
You were too loud last year at Merriweather.
But, okay, well, that has nothing to do with us. That's my sound man. So.
Well, I'm just telling you, you know, you can be too loud.
Yeah.
Especially now.
You're too old is what's happening.
I know. But you have to remind me of that.
But we were always told from this really great sound man we had in the early days, like, if you can keep your stage volume down, I can control it out here. You know, if you keep your guitars at a modest volume, I can crank them through the PA. So we always lived by that. We tried. Plus, we had terrible monitors. We could never hear what we were singing at all because we owned the stuff. So then when we got to the point where, you know, we got to see Mark Ferrari and we were rolling in.
You saw real equipment.
Oh, my God, and volume. And, you know, we're every club, every venue had their own PA or they were renting, so it wasn't ours. So we could just let loose, man.
I'm blown away by the digital part. I watched the sound check with Tommy Conwell last summer down at Dewey Beach, and I hadn't been at a sound check in 20 years. And like, right. I respect what you guys do as rock stars and all that, but the fact that you can walk the room and get everything
with an iPad,
that just blew me away. And then when the show started, it just sounded so great in the to have the right person with the iPad.
That's the other part is the digital recall. From sound check. Now, of course, the room changes when people get in it, but one of the biggest factors is like when you have a multi-band bill, you go up there and you do the sound check, you work on your monitors, so you're satisfied. You can hear your voice, you can hear whatever instrumentations you want on stage. And then you get done after, you know, 45 minutes of doing this.
The next band comes in and resets all the dials.
They reset everything it's all gone, right?
So like, you have to put a memory, it's like a memory seat in the car.
It is. So every time, like, I try to remember, I'm like, I make. Please, can you save that? Because they can. All they have to do is hit a button. But sometimes they forget. They don't do it. So you're like, you get back on stage, and it's nothing like it was at soundcheck. You know, like just, you know, your voice isn't there, whatever. You know, it's just.
There's nothing that bothers me more.
TV
when I sit
too.
Close than a person in a band who can't hear themselves. Yeah. And they're because I've been the guy taking phone calls where I'm like, answer the phone. We need help. It's a much more of an ensemble effort than just the four or five of you on stage.
Oh yeah, yeah,
big
yeah.
time.
And it's frustrating, like, you know, when you're struggling up there, and it's interesting. Usually, when you're a new band, you just fight through it. But after you've been on the road and had the luxuries, that's when you see the older cats will just they're not going to have it.
Well, you want to you're obsessed with being great too. I mean, we all want to look good here.
In
right?
fact, that night that we were talking about with Iron Maiden and Twisted Sister, one of the most vivid memories was Bruce Dickinson running over to the monitor guy and screaming at him, waving, gesticulating, waving hands like you know his voice was cutting out, and he was not happy.
Now listen, I don't want to not promote Pretty Boy Floyd opening the tour
right.
on Sunday.
Okay, yeah. Pretty Boy Floyd. Yeah.
I panned them really badly like 35 years ago. So sorry guys.
So the
I'm
guy
still here trying hard.
So the guy that produced our debut record, the Rat Race record, produced.
I remember
Pretty Boy
that.
Floyd
I remember out, that when they came out.
And he spoke.
Howard
about Benson.
Benson. That's
yeah.
right.
Went on to a huge career.
What else did he do?
Well, he really hit a stride. During the beginning of the American Idol era, he produced Chris Daughtry's first, I think, couple records and had huge hits.
That's a great sound.
Yeah.
That Daughtry sound is a great sound.
Oh, he's just a great singer. Hell of a nice guy, too. Just you know, salt of the earth. Came up from, like, kind of the club scene more south. You know, he's from like, in Virginia, North Carolina area. Anyway, but after that, Howard was like the go-to guy for hard rock. Like he did the POD record, the really big one. You know, with We Are.
Yeah, I remember that.
Youth of America, Youth of the Nation, or whatever. And he did like a ton of records in that era. Just huge hits.
Long career.
Yeah.
John Allen is here. He is in Stone Horses. He is in Child's Play on May 3rd. Is it 3rd or 4th? Am I get the dates right?
The 4th.
4th.
Yeah.
You're the 4th and the 5th then. Is that what
Correct.
We're saying?
Yeah.
4th is Derby Day. It's Derby Day. It's Saturday. It's M3. All the rockers will be there. My big appreciation to John for doing the documentary. We're going to come back and talk about rock and roll, songwriting, and themes of the working man because we're in Dundalk, and it's not like we don't know anything about being from Dundalk. We're both from Dundalk. We're at Costas. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Liberty Pure Solutions, getting me clean water, as well as Jiffy Lube Multi-Care. I am wearing my Orioles orange. because the Orioles are playing today. I put this thing together months ago. We didn't know the bridge was going down. Todd Crandall's going to be here a little later on. My high school, Kimo Sabi, who helps run things over here and tries to keep the place running nice. And we lost the bridge, and it's a mess over in the peninsula getting over here. But we want to make sure we're supporting folks over here as well. Key Brewing will be here. Joe Gold will be here a little later on. I had Mike McDonald on about 2 years ago here. That we've all had at least one Dundalk calling if we're from Dundalk, at least just to try it. I'm back for more Costas. John Allen's going to hang out and do another segment with us. We're going to talk some rock and roll and songwriting. Stay with us.